With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This is the Speak for Yourself podcast featuring the best of Colin Cowherd and Jason Whitlock. I'm your host, Jason McIntyre. Yes, we are working on a holiday, folks. Happy Memorial Day weekend to everybody. And a happy Memorial Day weekend to Jason Whitlock, who was in Indiana for the Indianapolis 500. Fox Sports Radio host Doug Gottlieb is filling in for the big guy today. Here we go. Colin tells you why LeBron and the Cavs playing the underdog card could be successful for them in the finals. Doug Gottlieb believes we have to wait for the finals to be over to determine if the Kevin Durant experiment was successful or not. Former NBA All-Star Carlos Boozer argues why Kevin Durant needs a ring this year. Former Super Bowl champ Eric Davis joins the show and offers a passionate critique of John Mara and the Giants regarding Colin Kaepernick. Plus, we have to discuss the sad, and yes, that's the word I'm using, sad news about Tiger Woods getting a DUI early this morning. The mugshot is atrocious, and boy, it is just an all-around terrible situation for Tiger Woods. Finally, do the Seahawks have to do more to keep Richard Sherman happy in Seattle? Ready for Speak for Yourself? Take it away, Cowherd!
Welcome to the show. I'm Colin Cowherd, and I'll tell you why Kevin Durant is trying to fool you.
And I'm Doug Gottlieb, in for Jason Whitlock. I'll tell you how Tiger's latest stumble may be his worst yet. Speak for yourself. Starts now.
We got ballers on the show today, folks. All three of these guys can hit a J. Gottlieb a little less consistently. But three of these four guys can hit a jumper. Hi, everybody. Welcome in. Happy Memorial Day. A couple of former NBA players here, Carlos Boozer, Eddie House. Let's start with some hoops.
All the pressure appears to be on those Golden State Warriors as they're huge favorites to beat the Cavs in the finals. For their part, the Cavs seem loose. LeBron James and his teammates took their time off for Thursday night's game one to catch Future in concert Saturday night. Here you see him. Yesterday, LeBron weighed in on the odd feeling of being the underdog.
There was a line that Vegas has made you an underdog in 6 of 8 finals. Is that, do you like that? Are you surprised by that? Or what do you make of that?
I only play blackjack in Vegas anyway, so it doesn't matter to me. I feel good about our chances. Very good.
Colin, should LeBron embrace the underdog role against the Warriors?
I think it's always better to chase than be chased. It's more fun. Like, if you ran a 40-yard dash and you started 5 yards behind, you'd probably run a faster time. Underdog is great when it's close. If I'm a college basketball coach and I'm a 37-point underdog to Duke, that's no good. If I'm a 4-point underdog to Duke, when you look at the stats our staff prepared and you look at these two teams on paper, I know the East is worse. This should be a decent series. I like my chances with these numbers and, hey, you guys could get swept. I think underdog is great when it's a reasonably close physical matchup. And I think both teams have four high-end players.
We saw these teams play twice in the regular season. The Warriors were up big in Cleveland, then couldn't put them away, and then they demolished the Cavs the second time around. Right. And, of course, all of us know the playoffs are different. These teams have evolved since then. But I think that's the guide by which Vegas used to create the fact that the Warriors are the favorites and the Cavs are the underdogs.
Right.
I don't think LeBron can play the underdog. I just don't. He said that I'm not even supposed to be here. Like, hey, dude, you're 6'8", 260 pounds. Right. Where the hell else are you supposed to be?
Right.
If you're the greatest player on earth, you can't say I'm the underdog. However, I do think it's important for his teammates. That any sort of motivational factor, any ability to get them to play a little bit tougher, a little bit more like grinders, a little bit more physically, to take the challenge of nobody thinks we're going to beat this team, even though everybody in that locker room and a lot of people nationally do think the Cavs are going to beat that team. I don't think it helps LeBron, but I do think he can help it for the rest of his teammates, especially those group that he surrounds himself with, those ancillary parts off the bench. Richard Jefferson, who is going to retire, Kyle Korver, who's never been to the finals. Those guys could use some of this underdog mentality.
Did you like being a dog?
Yeah, absolutely. I did. I mean, it gave me an edge, like a chip on my shoulder. I agree with you. I think LeBron already has the motivation. He's chasing MJ. He's chasing greatness. But I think for some of those other guys, this is great bulletin board material. You know, we're the underdog, but we're the champs. Some of those guys, like Deron Williams, first time in the finals. You know, like you said, Kyle Korver, same thing. They're probably motivated just by the championship alone, as it said, but this is extra added motivation, more fuel on the fire, so to speak.
I also don't think, I mean, you guys have been in the locker room. This stuff doesn't actually help a team win or team lose. Like, nobody in real basketball cares.
Cleveland hasn't been disrespected. They're right. An underdog. There's a difference between nobody. Like, people know Cleveland's good,
Right. But let me tell you, if you got to get motivated to be in the finals, and this is the thing to motivate, you in trouble anyway. Right. Number one, this is a team full of veterans. I don't think any of this matters. It's peripheral opponents. It's outside interference. You see there at the Future concert, they're trying to just relax, get comfortable, because they know the task that they have to do. They're a veteran team. There's not like there are young guys out there that feel that pressure, or you're going to put it on the, oh, look, they got us as underdogs. We're going to play a little harder. That's not happening out there. You're going to play hard regardless, and if you need those type of motivational pushes, you don't need to get out on the court. And if I sense that, and if I'm a teammate, hey, you got to stay on the bench. Or, coach, you got to stay on the bench. I don't need you out there because the moment might be too big for you.
And, you know, Steve Kerr said today that as of now, he plans on not coaching game one, but he did kind of leave the door open to that possibly changing. Be interested to see how that affects the Lions in Vegas.
First of all, Cleveland is different than the Warriors because this is the first year with KD. So there is a sense of urgency of let's get the chemistry right. Let's post some real W's. Now, this Cleveland team's off a championship. We saw a video during the playoffs. There were times Cleveland was bordering on disrespectful to opponents, flipping the ball. LeBron turns his back on players.
Throwing the ball off the backboard.
I really do think there's an advantage in Cleveland in this way, getting the beer during the playoffs, is that from the very beginning this year, all Cleveland's really cared about, like the East is weaker. They've been to the championship. They added players. They knew they were going to get here. Golden State was pretty sure they were, but for most of the year, we talked about San Antonio. And I still am not sure Clay, KD, Steph is perfect. I feel like I did with Miami's first. Their raw talent wins. I'm still not sure what I'm getting from Clay in the finals. I think Cleveland knows exactly what they are. This morning, they wake up. This is, you know, our batting order. I still think they're mixing the batting order up in Golden State.
I agree. And then you have Mike Brown coaching. That's different than having Steve Kerr.
Different dynamic. Right.
It's a different dynamic there. And how you work Clay in, what JaVale McGee does under the white hot spotlight. JaVale McGee 2.0 has been spectacular this year, right? He's finally lived up to all of that God-given ability. Yeah. But how does he react? How does Draymond react now that we're paying attention to every little elbow, every argument with an official, every time he gets into somebody's chest? There's a lot of unknown we have with the Warriors, even though they've been to the finals now for a third consecutive year.
The finals tip off Thursday with the Warriors and Cavs facing off for an NBA record third straight time. After splitting the first two meetings, the Warriors grabbed some headlines in the offseason. They convinced former MVP Kevin Durant, great player, to join Golden State and form a super team. And since Durant's arrival in Oakland, it's been viewed as finals or bust for the Warriors. Durant's teammate Draymond Green thinks Durant's season is already a success, regardless of the outcome in the finals. Quote, he doesn't seem like he's overjoyed or anything like that. Excited to be headed to the finals, but at the same time, he knows he didn't make the decision he made to go to the finals. He made the decision he made, number one, for his own life. All right, Gottlieb, agree that Kevin Durant's season should already be viewed as a wonderful success.
No. No. It's not finals or bust. It's championship or bust. And he's trying to sell us guys on this wholesale of, hey, I found my zen, I found my happy place, I enjoy going to work, which is important. Okay, but talking about what his life is going to be like if and when he wins a championship when he hasn't won a championship is like me talking with these guys about what it must have been like to play in the NBA when I never made the NBA, right?
Right.
Don't tell me about how it won't change your life if it hasn't gotten an opportunity to happen just yet. Look, I don't think he has to win a championship to deem his season a success, but to not have actually seen the finals play out, to see how he reacts to his newfound role of being a rebounder, being a shot blocker, having to guard LeBron in big spots, how he competes in the biggest of games. Remember last year at home when they had a chance to eliminate the Warriors, Game 6, he played one of his worst big games in his career. So I don't think that the season is a disappointment. I don't think it's a success because it's not finished yet, but I'm also not buying this whole idea of I'm good whether we win a championship or don't win a championship.
Yeah, I think he has to win the finals, and I think it's different if he didn't leave. If you stay in Oklahoma City and you give it a valiant effort and you lose to the Warriors and LeBron, people say, heck of a career. Maybe you win one, you do a Dirk Nowitzki. People are like, all-time top 50 player. But when you go to the new law firm, you're going to be partner. Okay, he's going to be partner. He's going to be crowned. He's going for the bonus. This is all different. Or he could be Karl Malone, because Karl Malone is terrific. 14-time All-Star, 2-time MVP, top 50 player. But we never talk about Karl Malone. Okay, Charles Barkley, if he wasn't really funny, we wouldn't talk about Charles Barkley. The difference is to be a legend, and this is why he's going there to get to the top. If he wanted to win, he didn't have to leave.
To be successful, you have to win, number one. And if he does not win this year in these finals, it's not a success. You can't deem his season already success. Like you said, it's the reason why he went to Golden State was to get over the hump to win the championship. Otherwise, stay in Oklahoma City. You had them beat anyway 3-1. But you felt that you didn't have the team and enough to get it done
right.
to win that championship.
You were already going.
So you didn't jump ship.
You were already going deep into
exactly.
the playoffs.
But Carlos, but you help me out with this. We do think that there's a definitive statement, whatever happens in these finals. LeBron failed in his first run with the Miami Heat. That wasn't the end of the story. The first year is still hard because even this year, he was hurt and then Steph started to really play well. And only now in the playoffs have they both played well at the same time. So as much as we'd like to say if they lose, the season may be a failure, but the experiment still may be undetermined as to whether or not it fails or succeed, much like LeBron in Miami.
I disagree. I think he has to win. He could have stayed in Oklahoma City, got beat by Golden State, or whatever, and been in the same place he's in right now. He has to win. He came to Golden State to win the championship, to be a champion, to get to that mountaintop that Colin talked about. So at the end of the day, if he goes and loses to LeBron and the Cavs, he has a chink in his armor, in my opinion. Like, he's not as great as he's supposed to be, especially with a team that already won it by themselves without him even being there 2 years ago.
Listen, how much heat did LeBron get losing in Dallas?
A lot.
He was destroyed.
A lot.
But it wasn't just that he lost. It was the fact that he wasn't ready for that spotlight, that he didn't perform as well as he...
Are we sure Durant is? I'm not sure he is.
We're not, but what I'm saying is, it's really important, the context of it is, let's see how he plays before we determine that he's the reason that they came up short, right? Like, if Klay Thompson doesn't play well and Steph doesn't play well and they attack Steph the way they did last year, are we still going to say that he didn't play well in the finals? Let's let it play out.
I don't think that's what we're saying. We're saying is the season success, is a success if they win it or not. And remember, you talk about LeBron and that first year of losing it, he didn't have an All-NBA player. He didn't have two All-NBA players on his team, a defensive player of the year, and another All-Star. He had two other All-NBA players, and that was it. This guy has three guys that he could lean on. And first off, he's 7 foot. He's going to get his own shot, so mm-hmm. he's always going to look good and have his numbers. But now, is he going to get over the hump? Is the team going to get over the hump? That was the reason why he went to Golden State. Are they going to do it? If they do it, then it's a success. If they don't, it's a failure, not the experiment, though.
And the culture of basketball is unfair. In baseball, it doesn't matter. Barry Bonds, all-time great. We don't judge on titles. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how many Derek Jeter won. A couple. But in football, I don't know how. You could take the greatest left tackles of all time. Anthony Munoz, John Hanna. I don't know how many titles they won. Listen, this is the way it is. Since Jordan played, like, we judge you on titles.
It's the same with quarterback in the NFL. I mean, there's the parallel. Look, we're all kind of in agreement here that it's not a success yet.
He's got to win big.
He's got to win. I would just also caution people, though, on the idea that he has to win this year. Remember, yes, he doesn't have the surround. He didn't have the Jordan. LeBron didn't have the supporting cast the first time he went to the finals. He also went against the Mavericks, who didn't. That wasn't a great Mavericks team. They didn't even have Caron Butler.
Dirk. J-Kidd.
But it wasn't J-Kidd prime. It was J-Kidd post-prime. They didn't have Caron Butler, who might have been their third best player.
J-Kidd post-prime is better than a lot of guys in their prime.
But is that better than LeBron, Kyrie, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson coming off a championship?
No,
we all
know if they lose, not just us in the media, not just fans, the owners of the Warriors are going to be saying, should we have done this?
Yeah, no.
I mean, the owners of the Warriors.
Colin Kaepernick, who still isn't on an NFL roster as of right now. Giants owner John Mara chimed in on Cap saying the team hasn't discussed signing the quarterback this offseason and that they've heard from fans who would be angry if they did. Mara said, quote, all of my years being in the NFL, I never received more emotional mail from people than I did about that issue. If any of your players ever did that, we're never coming to another Giants game. It wasn't one or two letters. It was a lot. It's an emotional issue. An emotional issue for a lot of people, more so than any other issue I've run into. Colin, is fan backlash the biggest reason Colin Kaepernick remains unsigned?
Well, listen, in a way, yes. This is the league. It's never been player friendly. Okay, they don't have guaranteed contract. You can be cut. There's a salary cap. So basically they say, no guarantees and we cut you when you want. Baseball gives you no salary cap. NBA gives you guarantees but a salary cap. Football, even the structure of the contracts. Do you know that coaching pensions are better than player pensions? This is a players, GM, owner league. They call the NFL the shield. You've never called the NBA the ball or the baseball the bat. In the NFL, it's understood when we talk here, it's the shield. It's not player friendly. It's a one-way street, and it's always been that way. I think we've seen Kaepernick's story a dozen times over the last 10 years. You'd have to go back and dig them up. But essentially, they're saying, dude, you're not a great player. You're going to play on our terms. And if you can't define yourself as a football guy, this is the way these owners act.
Okay, but what about the idea that fan backlash is the biggest reason? That was the question. Fan backlash the biggest?
I was just about to go there, Colin. That's not the question. The question is, it the biggest backlash, the fan response? And that right there, you know what? That right there is the biggest piece of bull that he's putting out there. This is one of the Mara family, that's football royalty.
Correct.
That
right.
name, when yeah. you talk about the NFL and you talk about the yeah. shield, for him to come out and say, we haven't discussed this player, if you haven't discussed this player, why are you discussing him now? You don't need to talk about who you're not signing. And you want to sit here and say that has nothing to do with why you are not signing him. So it's disrespectful, and you're getting letters saying it's disrespectful for a guy to take the knee for a stance, but it's not disrespectful for you to sign players. You signed Kerry Collins back in the day after leaving the Panthers behind alleged racial slurs to Hispanic and black players on the team. After quitting the team, you sign him. You have Brown on your team after beating someone. So it's not disrespectful to physically harm a human being, but it's disrespectful for him to take this stance, and you're not going to say, and you want to go in there and talk about this player that you haven't discussed and saying that the fans don't want this around, but the fans are okay with that other? I'm sure you got letters about that as well, but you want to talk about this one. That's a damn shame
well,
he's doing that,
man. Here's what's interesting. You mentioned one word, mail. Who sends mail right now, Eric? Think about it. It's the older fans, the 55 and up. They're not plugged into what's happening on social media with Kaepernick. They don't know there's an online uprising backing Kaepernick, hoping he gets in the league. These older fans, and remember, we've talked about this.
Giants also have a very old fan base.
There you go. The Steelers, Giants, they have the older fan base. Those are the fans who are going to let the owners know, we don't want anything to do with this guy. And so it's not so much about the Kerry Collins, which is a great point. It's more about these fans. They saw the Kaepernick thing. The older generation, they're not into Kaepernick.
Well, let me just start with this one thing, okay? When was the last time Colin Kaepernick was actually a really good NFL quarterback?
3 years ago, maybe?
Four, maybe five. I mean, 2012 season, 2013 Super Bowl was peak Kaepernick. And after that, it's leveled off some, right? He had shoulder surgery, had hand surgery, had knee surgery. So it stands to reason that even though the statistics would tell you that he had a good year last year with San Francisco, he didn't have a great year. Kelly's system, first time around. So should he be on an NFL roster? Maybe. The problem is, can he fit in as a backup, considering he has a unique skill set and he's never really been a mentor quarterback before? Now, if the question is that the biggest reason he hasn't signed, the answer is, yeah, probably.
Yes.
But I do think there are other issues. I also think, and you kind of pointed this out, John Mara needs to stop talking. He really does. He embarrassed himself and embarrassed the league with how he tried to kind of backpedal on the Josh Brown thing. And now he's embarrassing himself and embarrassing the league with how he's characterizing, or maybe even mischaracterizing, Colin Kaepernick and the uproar over Kaepernick versus other issues with the league. This was not as big an issue as the domestic violence with
Ray Rice or with Ray Rice.
It's not. Yeah. He's one of these guys that he's kind of talking to hear himself speak, and he's making himself look really foolish, even if he does have some valid statements in what he's saying.
Even though it's the best league in terms of commerce, I mean, I think it's reasonable to say it's mostly a conservative-run business.
Yes.
Whereas, and it just is. And sometimes the NFL owners sound antiquated. Welcome back. Joining Doug and I, once again, Eric Davis, Jason McIntyre. Let's switch gears here and talk about some unsettling news out of Florida this morning, where Tiger Woods was arrested early on DUI charges near his hometown of Jupiter. Nice hometown. Woods was booked into Palm Beach County Jail around 7 in the morning and was then released several hours later. This is just the latest in a series of both on and off the course setbacks. The 14-time major champion has suffered since his now infamous Thanksgiving incident in 2009. All right, Duggar, what's your reaction to Tiger's arrest?
I think this is the greatest fall in the history of sports. It really is. That doesn't mean that the bottom is as low as Ryan Leaf's bottom.
Right.
Or is Mike Vick going to prison, or O.J. Simpson even going to prison. But in the time from 08 when he won the Master, when he won the Open at Torrey Pines to now, I mean, between the womanizing and now the multiple back surgeries, the ACL surgery, the Achilles tendon surgery, just all the things, the divorce, the things that have happened in his life, to then being part of the mugshot hall of shame, if you will, like that's the biggest. He was the Michael Jordan of sport. Like, he was more than just golf.
Yeah.
It was a popular video game. He was an iconic figure in sports and challenging the greatest record of all time in his sport, the 18 wins from Jack Nicklaus. To go from that in 08 to now, I can't think of a more precipitous decline in the history of sport.
You know what it makes me think of? Like, you know, when I think of Tiger, word association. Like, the second word now is, like, legend, burnout. Like, it literally feels like this is his set. You know, most guys go to the Champions Tour. He goes to the all-time burnout tour. Like, it's over. He is now a former golfer. That's what it feels like to me.
I'm not going to go that far. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he was going to Waffle House.
No.
Maybe.
Eric.
I'm just saying.
3 in the morning, you're either going to or from.
No one goes to the Waffle House. You end up at the Waffle House. That's pretty much. I'm just going to say that. And you're looking at him, the bad back. Is it pills? Is it something like that? We don't know what was happening. I'm not going to say a DUI. It's dumb. That's a dumb thing for Tiger to do. Call an Uber. Get a driver. You can afford these things. That right there is just a dumb mistake. I'm not going to take it as far as this is a major part of his decline and everything else is falling apart for him like that. It's a dumb mistake that anyone can make that he should not have made, especially with all the other things that
have
happened.
You're not going to link it to a bunch of stuff.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm not going to link it to everyone. And that's what's happening right now. It's going to all get linked up because he's got the Nick Nolte going with the photo, and we're going to link it all together. We all know what happened to Tiger, the bad things that happened. He says he's trying to come back and get his body healthy enough to play. That, I wonder if it's going to ever happen. But I'm not going to throw this on top of
it. Is it possible he just had a third glass of wine on a holiday?
That's what I'm saying. It's possible.
That doesn't look like a third glass of wine.
But if he had a third glass of wine, remember, he has his own restaurant in Jupiter, Florida. It's beautiful. He's got his own room back there. I've actually been there. The guys are super nice. It's a great place. Likelihood is he there hanging out? Why don't you call Lyft, Uber, or somebody call you? How does he not have a friend that goes like, hey, dude, you can't get behind the wheel?
Doug, here's who his friend was. It was his father. He was linked with his father forever. He taught him how to play golf, brought him up since the age of 4. I heard you talking about it on your show today. And since he lost his dad in 2006, he has been without an identity, really. Remember, it spiraled. He won a couple majors, you know, in the immediacy afterward, but it just kind of spiraled out of control. Hold on. He lost his way with his wife, didn't know what he was doing, was partying up in Vegas, okay? Then he's got the injuries. Then I want to be a Navy SEAL. He said that in the ESPN magazine article. Famous story. This is one of the greatest golfers of all time who wants to become a Navy SEAL. The guy lost his way. He doesn't know what he's doing right now. It's sad. That's the word I associate here. This is very sad for me.
And I hate to be this guy to give in to Colin and his desire to talk about LeBron, but I'm going to right now.
Cool.
Okay? Tiger Woods, before LeBron, was the first guy I can remember. We were told he was going to be one of the greatest of all time, and he lived up to it.
Yep.
But then he couldn't handle all that went with being one of the greatest of all time. Let's a little tip of the cap to LeBron James. There has been none of this. That doesn't mean he's perfect, but he's done a perfect job of managing himself, managing his life, so that we don't hear any of this nonsense we've heard thus far. And that is a tremendous amount of pressure to go on a wayward path when you have all that money, all that fame, and everybody will just tell you yes, yes, yes. LeBron has lived up to that. Tiger has, unfortunately, lived down to it.
And I was going to go there as well. Tiger, and when I was still playing, we were having discussions about this and everything, about certain guys, how all of a sudden you go from being this nerdy kid that no one knows.
That's right.
And Tiger was that nerdy kid that no one knew. Yes, no one knew. And of course he was touted to be this big talent, but he became that talent. And Tiger, as you said, he was the man. He was an icon. He realized, socially awkward.
And
still the same, he's still the same nerdy guy. And I think a lot of that had to do with the way it was affecting him. And that's why I think a lot of the pitfalls that he ran into had to do with that. There was so much thrown at him so soon. He wasn't able to handle it as an adult.
Now we're joined again by Eric Davis, Jason McIntyre. Let's head to the Pacific Northwest, where it's been an off-season filled with plenty of drama for the Seahawks as they get set to launch OTAs tomorrow. Last week, ESPN reports there was friction between the team's two biggest stars, Richard Sherman and Russell Wilson, and that Sherman still blames Pete Carroll for that Super Bowl loss to New England. The Seattle Times said this will be Carroll's most challenging season ever. Doug, should Carroll and the Seahawks do more to keep Richard Sherman happy?
No, they should do more to protect Russell Wilson and run the football. I mean, the reason that this team struggled so mightily early in the season was their offensive line stunk. The defense has aged a little bit. They've had some injuries. They've had some dysfunction. They're maybe not as dominant as times, although they didn't have all of their pass rushers for most of the regular season last year. They weren't as good up front. They weren't dominating people on either side of the football, and that's why they put themselves in position to have to fight their way into the playoffs. But the truth is, Colin, you look at that division, the Niners don't have the talent to compete. Nobody believes the Rams are going to be a playoff contender. The Cardinals appear to be over the hill in many important spots, including quarterback, where Carson Palmer might have wanted to retire at the end of this year. Larry Fitzgerald might have wanted to retire at the end of this year. There doesn't appear to be a challenger. They're going to be in the playoffs. They're going to have a sick defense. If they play at home, they'll have a chance to win. But you can't simply pacify Richard Sherman, because when you do so, now everybody else in that defense is going to be, well, you have to make me happy as well. Just protect Russell Wilson, get after the quarterback, play football, and winning cures all ills.
Let's take his name out. If I said there's a 29-year-old corner coming off an MCL.
What are you laughing at?
We'll find out. I know where he's going.
So a 29-year-old corner, forget the name, coming off MCL, appears to be slightly deteriorating.
Left out Pro Bowler.
Great player. We got him in the fifth round. He has been a Hall of Famer. Can I start to make the argument, pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered, the old Wall Street saying, that you have gotten so much more out of Richard Sherman, there does come a time where 29, corner, perimeter player,
mouthy,
injury, battling with quarterback. Hey, he's still good. He'll burn us maybe for a few years, but we're moving on.
Yeah.
Well, they wouldn't have.
Come on, yet.
Eric. I can't wait to hear this defense.
First of all, 29, he's got a lot of years left, okay? Number one.
That's a quarterback.
Wait, Darrell Revis fell off a cliff.
No. That's number one. He played with the MCL all last season, okay, and he was still able to perform. So imagine with him healthy how he's going to be able to perform. Does Sherman put a lot of pressure on the teammates around him? Yes, he does, but that is a part of that culture. I played in a culture where we won as a team. If we lost, it was someone's fault. Because if everyone's doing their job, you shouldn't lose. And guess what? We all called one another out. And if it was your fault too many times, guess what? You were that guy that needed to move on, because you're not helping any of us. And that's a part of the pressure it puts on there. I've spoken to Sherm about these issues. Sherm, you say, should you keep Sherm happy? You don't need to keep Sherm happy. Sherm doesn't expect him to keep him happy. He has a job to do, and he wants to win. He understands that if they want to go out there with the trade aspects of things, he'll go somewhere else and play. If they choose to do so, he doesn't control that. But he's happy. They're happy with him.
Is he happy?
Yes, he's happy with them. They're happy with him.
Eric, here's why I push back on that, okay? We're in the era of social media where athletes instantly go on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and they instantly reply to shoot down a story. There was a lot of bad stuff about Richard Sherman in this. Nothing from him on social media. No response whatsoever. Michael Bennett tried to squash the story. Richard Sherman didn't say anything. You may have talked to him, right? He didn't say anything to his millions of fans on social media. You know what this says to me? Hey, this is who I am.
Well,
I came out of the tough streets of Compton.
He said something to one person, and I heard it out of his mouth that he's cool, so he's cool.
You don't think he comes off looking terrible here?
The idea, though, that you're going to open up to trade talks, at least open up the possibility of it, it's like calling a divorce attorney and saying, hey, what would it be like if we split up all of our stuff? Who would get what?
They're thinking about stuff.
That's really hard to put that genie back in the bottle.
The 49ers did that with the Saints because they asked about me almost every offseason when I was playing for them, and nothing ever came from it. Did I know about it? Yes. I had a job to do. These are my boys that I'm going to play. You can't control it, and you can't worry about what you can't control.
Where's Earl Thomas?
Sherm's too smart for that.
Where's Cam Chancellor? Nobody else on that defense is raising hell and demanding Russell Wilson to apologize for a Super Bowl interception 2 years ago.
All right.
So you've been told.
This is the Speak for Yourself podcast featuring the best of Colin Cowherd and Jason Whitlock. I'm your host, Jason McIntyre. Thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you had a great holiday weekend. We are on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, YouTube. And it's going to be a big week for the NBA Finals. They start Thursday. We're getting our picks in this week. You know I'm all in. Warriors in four. See you tomorrow.